Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Early Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo!
KD! You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Oh! Josh Okogie! May the force be with you! Oh, my goodness, Karl Anthony Towns! He is not human! He is catastrophic!
Hello and welcome to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I am your host, Brendan Hedke. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. The show is also always a part of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast network on wolfamongwolves.com. Make sure to check out all the written work that's going on over there. I personally have written a bunch lately. I've been having a lot of fun with it. I've just kind of been getting a really good urge to write some pieces. So I hope you guys have been enjoying those. It's been about a week since I last recorded. I think my last recording was right before the Timberwolves went out and beat the Pelicans, last Saturday or whatever day that was. And so we haven't talked about that game at all, but that was a really solid game. It got a little intense at the end. I was getting nervous that the Timberwolves were going to blow that game as well, but they ended up winning. They closed it out, and that was without D'Angelo Russell. That was a Ricky Rubio-led Timberwolves team, and they beat a much more star-studded Pelicans team with Zion, with Brandon Ingram. We had Malik Beasley and Josh Okogie and Ricky Rubio and Naz Reid. And those were the guys that went out and beat the Pelicans. And the Pelicans aren't like top of the league type of team or anything in that regard. They're a middling team that has been struggling. And I think a lot of that comes down to coaching and Stan Van Gundy just having no clue how to utilize his best players. But it's still an impressive win because they were a more talented team. They still had Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson and Naz Reid and Ed Davis and Jaden McDaniels, who is 100 pounds lighter than Zion Williamson, helped shut him down. And that was impressive. But then the Timberwolves followed up with two games against the Golden State Warriors, one on Monday night and one last night as I'm recording this. I am recording this right now on Thursday after the Timberwolves lost last night to the Warriors. The game on Monday, Timberwolves lost 130-108, again without D'Angelo Russell, still Karl Anthony Towns in COVID protocols, health and safety protocols, and that game, the Warriors pretty much had like a 15-point lead for the entirety of the game, 15-20-point lead, and you never really felt like the Timberwolves had much of a chance to come back. Every time they got it down to like 13, Steph would hit a three, or Wiggins would do something, or whatever. And last night's game was kind of a different story. I felt like the Timberwolves, I never necessarily thought they were like for surely going to win this game or like we're going to come back. But it was a much more enjoyable and a much less frustrating game where the Timberwolves weren't out of it until the end. And that's pretty much all you can ask for as a Timberwolves fan. I think all the really bad losses have just really struggled. And the Warriors, again, aren't a top of the league team, but they still have Steph Curry. They had a fully healthy roster, and the Timberwolves were missing their two best players. And the Wolves lost by 12, and that wasn't inflated by, like, garbage time stuff. Like, when starters were going out, the Wolves were down about 12-15. I don't remember exactly what the score was there, but the Wolves were in it for the majority of this game. And, you know, it got to 20 at a point, and then the Timberwolves brought it back down. And it was an encouraging thing to see because they couldn't afford to get blown out by, like, 40. Like, that just was going to kill everything. And the Timberwolves still are pretty, you know, abysmal. They're struggling. And, you know, there's just not a lot to hang your hat on right now. But there is a one specific thing I wanted to talk about. First off, I wanted to talk about what this game in general. I don't think these Wolves-Warriors games really say much about the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't think you can read too much into it considering that the Timberwolves were without their best players. And, you know, even Jarrett Culver got hurt there, didn't play in the second one. So I don't think you can read a lot into the Timberwolves. A couple nuggets in here and there that I'm going to touch on, but specifically as a team, you know, it's hard to draw a lot of conclusions when you don't have your two best players. My question is, what does this say about the Warriors? Obviously, the Warriors aren't technically fully healthy because Klay Thompson is not playing this season, but still, a fully healthy team outside of that, that is immensely more talented than this Timberwolves team. Steph Curry is one of the 5-6 best players in the entire NBA. Andrew Wiggins is apparently an all-star, according to Warriors fans and national media people, and a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And then Draymond Green, really, really good defender, solid, you know, just makes a huge impact on the court. Kelly Oubre is not having a great season, but he still would have been like the Wolves' second or third best player, probably second best player behind Malik Beasley. So what does this say about the Warriors? It's not great for them if they're putting up this type of effort. Obviously, they did enough to win both games, but I expected it to be worse against a Timberwolves team that has looked really bad and just, you know, has no direction, it seems, until Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell are both back. So that's really, really the struggle there. But for the Warriors, it's like, wow, congrats. Like, you beat the Timberwolves in not, you know, great fashion. You never really pulled away and, like, solidified a win against this poor team early on. It just doesn't say good things about the Warriors. And I don't want to, you know, just like bring the Warriors down or anything, because obviously they have a much better record than the Timberwolves. But I just want to mention that. I just think that it says some things about the Warriors. The other thing I wanted to bring up quick was Andrew Wiggins. Finally got to watch Andrew Wiggins play against Minnesota. So I kind of keyed in on him for much of both of those games. So I wanted to kind of talk about Wiggins. Talk about what I saw and how that compares to his time in Minnesota. So in game one, Andrew Wiggins ended up scoring 23 points. He had 6 rebounds. He didn't have an assist. He had 3 steals, 3 blocks, and was a plus 22 in just under 30 minutes. He played really well. And those are performances that we've seen from Andrew Wiggins in a Minnesota Timberwolves uniform. You know, maybe not the 3 blocks, but we've seen games with 3 steals and 6 rebounds and 23 points. I think the one big thing that we can notice is the engagement on the defensive side of the ball has been different from Wiggins over his so far, 16, 17 games in Golden State so far. And we've seen Wiggins engaged on defense for stretches in Minnesota, but it never went out 30 games or anything like that. And that's where he's really going to solidify himself, in my mind and a bunch of other people's minds, is when he does this for half the season. If this continues for half the season, then you can buy it. But just seeing the highs and lows in Minnesota is something I haven't personally been able to buy into this season. I think he's looked good, but I feel like I've seen these stretches again. His shot selection doesn't look different. He looks like he's taking the same shots. He's knocking down threes with a higher clip, which is good, but I would be surprised if that stays at 40% all season long, where it's at currently, because I just don't think that I think it's going to kind of regress back down to the mean of like 35 or 36%, which he's, you know, shot in times before in his career. Maybe he'll be better than his career average of like 34%, but I don't expect him to stick up there. He's currently at 39.3%. I would be really surprised if that is where Wiggins stuck. But, you know, he's been doing better in that sense. And he hasn't been finishing at the rim very well, but I have noticed it feels like when he misses at the rim, he kind of typically gets his own rebound and puts that back in, which is something that is a little bit new as well. So that's good for him. But production-wise, he's relatively the same player, and he just averages more blocks. But he averages less steals, less assists, about the same rebounds. And he's shooting about the same from two-point range as well as he did the last, you know, year in Minnesota. So, you know, he's been a good player, and they're saying his defense has really improved, and it definitely has. He's been more engaged, but I think part of that comes with he's not always guarding the best wing on the opposing team. You know, he's been spending a lot of time on the second best wing, and Kelly Oubre's kind of been taking that role of taking the best wing on the opposing team, which leaves Wiggins to be the the weak side help defender, get those blocks, get those deflections and all that type of things, which he's been taking a lot more pride in this year. And, you know, that probably comes with playing alongside a Steph Curry and a Draymond Green that, you know, can really, you know, help someone stay engaged. Steph Curry, not a great defender, but he's a passable defender because he's engaged while he's on the floor most of the time. And he has good defenders like, you know, Oubre and Draymond Green around him, which has always allowed him to be better as a team defender. And that's kind of what I'm seeing from Andrew Wiggins. I don't think he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate like has been suggested before and anything. But I don't want to speak on Andrew Wiggins for a long time because he's not a Timberwolf anymore. We saw him for two games. I think the Wolves will play the Warriors one more time this season, and that's pretty much going to be it. So I don't want to go too in-depth on that. I just wanted to kind of touch on that after really watching Wiggins for two full games. And then that's my takeaway from that. But moving on, I want to talk about one of the things I think we can take away from these two Warriors games, or specifically the second Warriors game first. And that is Anthony Edwards. Edwards looked really good in game two. He looked really solid, and that is something that I think is really impressive because Edwards, so far this season, he had some really good games earlier in the year where, you know, we were pretty impressed. But lately, he's been kind of down, and the shooting percentages have been getting even worse, and it's not looking good. He's been playing like one of the worst rookies that gets like legitimate rotation minutes. And that's not what you want to hear from your number one overall draft pick. But in game two against Golden State, he dropped 25 points. He grabbed four rebounds, dished out two assists, had three steals, three turnovers, was 9 of 19 from the field, 5 of 8 from three, which means he was, you know, 4 of 11 from two-point range, which wasn't great. You know, you definitely want to see him doing better than that. But the 5 for 8 from three is, like, extremely encouraging where, you know, like, you can see there's going to be a game where Anthony Edwards drops 8 threes and, like, 40 points, and we're just living, you know, the high life. And that was really good to see him, you know, play in that way. He was really aggressive attacking the rim. He was really getting good looks from three and knocking them down. Some of that might have come with, you know, being on national television, playing against James Wiseman, wanting to prove yourself, which I'm happy, by the way, that they both scored 25 and the Timberwolves don't have to hear about, we don't have to hear about how the Timberwolves made the wrong, draft selection on draft night, made a huge mistake, you know, Wiseman was a clear number one for the Wolves and blah, 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 blah. I was happy to see them play, you know, at the same level in that game. So I just want to touch on that. Edwards looked really good. You can see the potential there and how good this kid can be. And, like, the Wolves have legitimately four players that can just go get you 20 points. They're capable of doing that, you know, with Kat, D'Lo, Beasley, and Anthony Edwards. Like, that's four people capable of scoring you 20 points. I'm not saying they're all going to average 20 points, but that's four very capable people. That's going to be important for the Timberwolves offense when they get to, a fully healthy squad. But the next person I want to talk about is Naz Reid. Naz Reid is a player that I actually wrote about recently. I think only a few days ago. I don't know. I've written a lot lately, and I can't remember when everything came out. But I wrote about Naz Reid just the other day. And I think it was after the Pelicans game, before either of these Warriors games. And Naz Reid has looked really good. Right now, Naz Reid is averaging 12 points off just under 5 rebounds, 1.2 assists, 1.6 blocks, which I believe is now 10th in the NBA. He had 5 blocks against the Warriors last night. And he's shooting 60.9% from 2, 38.8% from 3. And he's playing just 22 minutes a night. So his per 36 stats, he's looking like a 19.6 points, which is weird. It's the exact same as last year. But 19.6 points on better efficiency, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.5 blocks in 36 minutes. He's not going to be a 36-minute guy. The Timberwolves have Karl-Anthony Towns. Excuse me. But Naz Reid is a really important piece to this Minnesota Timberwolves team. He's progressed as a player a lot since last season. Not only just offensively, but defensively as well. Naz has taken some really good strides. He seems much more aware on the basketball court, which is huge because the Timberwolves have needed just bigs that can recognize things defensively. And I'm not saying Naz Reid has been great defensively in certain sets. Like, he still doesn't look great, defending in the pick and roll. But he has actually really solid, shot blocking prowess and, instincts, which is something that I didn't really think we would get from Naz Reid in his career, just because, he isn't the most athletic, but he transformed his body from last season even more. He dropped some weight, he looks more athletic, he looks quicker, which has definitely helped. But you got to remember, let's go ahead and let's paint a picture of Naz Reid right now. An undrafted free agent in the 2019 draft class. So a year and a half ago, Naz Reid was brought in by Gerson Rosas on a two-way contract, and he played his way into a full NBA contract through Summer League. And he is currently 21 and a half years old. He is younger than I am, and I'm young. He's younger than I am. He just turned 21 in August. I'll turn 22 in April. So he is, essentially, there's rookies younger than this guy. He's in his second year. And the progression we've seen in just the season plus, okay, let's put this into perspective. He's played 47 games in his career. So he's played basically half of an NBA season, and he's already a guy that is shooting 60% from 2, almost 40% from 3, and is scoring 12 points a game in 22 minutes. Like, that guy deserved to be drafted in the first round, and the Minnesota Timberwolves got him in the undrafted free agency after the draft. Nobody thought Naz Reid was worth drafting. I know there was question marks about his weight and his ability to be in shape. Those question marks are gone. He looks good physically, athletically. He's transformed his body. And apparently he's one of the most coachable guys in the league, and I believe it, because look at the progression. He's been amazing in that sense. The progression is there. He's looked great from just rookie Naz Reid to now. Has been a huge step forward, and he's not done growing. He's a legitimate backup, center in the NBA, and that is just amazing to see. Dane Moore actually tweeted out some size comparisons because, you think Naz Reid, he's 6'9". Seems like a undersized center in the league. But Dane did point out that there's a couple other, really good centers that are also 6'9". So just using combine numbers, which, is like the most legitimate numbers you can find. Bam Adebayo is 6'8¾". Naz Reid is 6'8¾". Jared Allen is 6'9". Those guys are, essentially the same size as Naz Reid. And then standing reach, Naz is at 9'1", Bam's at 9', Allen's at 9'1½". So they're basically same height, length. Nas is obviously not quite as athletic as either of those guys. He's not as fluid as Bam Adebayo, but he's not an undersized center, and that's like the main point. I'm not saying he's on the level of Bam. That's not what Dane's saying. We're just talking strictly size comparisons. You know, he's not an undersized center. Yeah, he's not the 7-foot giant that is Karl-Anthony Towns. He's not a Nurkic or a Joel Embiid, but he's not like an undersized PJ Tucker center. He's not, you know, a team that goes out and throws like, I don't know, like Grant Williams, who's like 6'7" at the center. Like, that's not who Naz Reid is. He's a bigger guy than that. I don't think he's as 264 pounds that he was as a rookie either. He's definitely taken some of that weight off. But he's a beast. And the one thing I really wanted to bring up with Naz Reid, and this was also brought up by Dane Moore. If you guys don't know who Dane Moore is, first off, what are you doing? Second off, go check out his podcast. It's the Dane Moore NBA podcast centered around the Timberwolves. He's a beat writer for the Timberwolves, or I should say beat podcaster for the Timberwolves. He doesn't write a lot right now. He's taking the podcasting thing, you know, head on, and he's doing a great job with that. So don't miss his podcast, seriously. Just go watch it. But Dane tweeted something out, and I'll read it. You know, I'll quote it here just to kind of give you guys a context of why I was thinking about this. He said, quote, "Obviously, Naz isn't Cat. But one concerning thing going forward is that Naz has been pretty awesome over this Catless stretch. He had 16 and 17 tonight. So if the five position hasn't been a big problem, that's the reason to doubt the idea that everything will be fine when Cat is back," end quote. Now, I don't know Dane's stance on this. I think, you know, Dane recently had a podcast on King's Pulse with one of the King's writers, and they were just talking about Cat coming back eventually, and Dane said that he thinks the Wolves will probably be around 500 basketball when Cat's back, and that's my stance on it too. I think that's where the Timberwolves are going to end up being when we have a fully healthy team. But I think the question here that Dane brought up is pretty interesting, but I kind of had a take about this, and I tweeted it out, you know, quote tweeted it last night, and I said I think it's more about Ed Davis than I do think it's about Towns, because the thing about it is, in the world where Karl-Anthony Towns comes back, which is a world we're hoping to see here hopefully in the next couple weeks at the latest, you're not replacing Karl-Anthony Towns with Naz Reid. You're essentially replacing Ed Davis with Naz Reid, and then replacing Naz Reid with Karl-Anthony Towns. So you're taking Ed Davis, who is a non-floor spacer, non-threat really to score the ball unless he's spoon-fed near the basket and he can get a dunk. You're replacing that with Naz Reid, who has a similar skill set to Karl-Anthony Towns. Again, like Dane said and like I'm saying right now, Naz is not Cat. They are two different level of players, but they share a lot of similarities in the fact that they can space the floor, they can take players off the dribble, they finish well around the basket. Obviously, like I said, space the floor, they shoot the ball really well. And they're actually pretty... Cat's a good passer. I think Naz is an okay passer. So that's where I think it comes into like a big thing, is Naz then shifts from Cat's role, and Cat will fill that better than Naz does. And Naz goes into his own role back in the bench, where he can open up the floor for the bench guys. He's going to open up the floor for Anthony Edwards to get to the rack. You know, instead of Ant trying to play with Ed Davis, where, you know, Ed is either, you know, out on the three-point line and his guy is sagging off, causing a clogged lane, or Ed is literally in the lane when Ant's trying to drive. You're not going to get that with Naz Reid nearly as often. Now, Naz can operate from the post, don't get me wrong, but Naz spaces the floor really well and is actually really solid as, you know, a driving type of player. And having that on the bench, where you're opening up more lanes for Edwards, for Jarrett Culver coming off the bench, that's going to be good. And you give Ricky Rubio, someone like Naz Reid, to play with, who is very capable you know, of being an offensive threat. And Ricky Rubio thrives off of having people that can make shots around him. I'm sorry, but Jarrett Culver, Ed Davis, being on the floor at the same time with Ricky Rubio just isn't great. But you can probably survive with Jarrett Culver and Naz Reid. And that's where I think it's important, because Naz Reid's going to, you know, get set up a lot better by Ricky Rubio than Ed Davis is. And I just think the floor is going to open up for those bench guys like the floor opens up for the starters with Cat. You know, Cat really does open many doors for the offense and even the defense this season, you know, in the starting lineup. And Naz Reid will do that for those bench guys way better than Ed Davis ever is going to, has been able to do. So that's really important. And I think the big thing that's going to be really interesting to watch and kind of just monitor as the Timberwolves go on is how close they can be to a top 10 offense. Now, currently, the Minnesota Timberwolves trail only one team in points per game off the bench, you know, in bench scoring. Timberwolves currently score 42.3 points per game with their bench guys. Second to the Detroit Pistons, who score 42.6. The Timberwolves bench also rebounds the ball better than any other bench in the entire league. 20.6 rebounds per game. That is first over, you know, the teams that come in second are like the Lakers and the Orlando Magic. Assists per game off the bench, 10.9 assists per game. They are number one in the league. Steals per game, they are second. Blocks per game, they are, it looks like, eighth. Shooting percentage, they are not great. They are towards, you know, they're like the sixth worst. So they're definitely getting the most shots up out of anybody. They're shooting the most shots off the bench. They're probably playing their bench guys more. Part of that has to do with, you know, garbage time. It does play a factor, don't get me wrong. But those players still are getting the ball in the hoop. And those bench guys right now are not the same bench guys that are going to be with a fully healthy Minnesota Timberwolves roster. So I guess what I'm saying is, that's why I'm still optimistic about this Timberwolves team, is just looking at, like, these numbers of these bench guys who have been, you know, occasionally it's been like a Jalen Noel. It's been like Jake Layman. Those, and it's obviously, you know, it's still Ricky Rubio and Jordan McLaughlin, who are, you know, known to be solid NBA players, and Anthony Edwards is still there. But the Timberwolves have a good bench, question mark? At least it seems to be with all these, you know, these stats. That's, like, kind of impressive. If the Timberwolves can have one of the better benches, I don't think they have the best bench in the league. But, like, the Timberwolves maybe have a little bit of depth. And we kind of thought that, I remember the first couple games, we kind of thought the Timberwolves had a little bit of depth. And they won some games, you know, against the Jazz. And we're like, wow, this team might have some depth behind Cat. And obviously, it's been a roller coaster since then. But let's not forget that. And now I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, okay, so Cat comes back and you basically are replacing, like, and Davis with Karl-Anthony Towns. You know, this Timberwolves team is probably going to be pretty good. I've been optimistic. And, you know, obviously you are your record. We're 4-12, which is not good. This team is probably eliminated from the playoff contention by now. You know, not really mathematically, but, like, you know, we're not making the playoffs. But there's reason to believe this team's going to be really good when Cat comes back. Like I said, Naz Reid is going to open up the floor for the bench. That's huge. Cat's going to open up the floor for the offense. And when he shares the floor with bench players, just literally everybody. Cat makes everybody around him better. We're seeing consistent growth from people like Naz Reid. Malik Beasley hasn't cooled off at all. He's at 19.9 points per game right now. If he had scored two more points yet, so far this season, he'd be averaging a flat 20 points per game. Cat and D'Lo have given you 20 in their games. Edwards, you know, is up and down, but you could think that with Cap back, he probably gets better because there's more open driving lanes for him. And then you see the growth from like Jaden McDaniels. You see somebody like Jared Vanderbilt proving that he can be a solid defensive option next to Karl Anthony Towns. So if you have a good bench and you have a starting lineup with three players that average 20 points per game and then two good defenders, like, why can't this team be a 500 basketball team fully healthy? Why can't this team compete with pretty much every other team in the NBA on any given night? And I think they can, and that's where I'm at with this Minnesota Timberwolves roster. And I felt, you know, it sucks, don't get me wrong. The offense isn't good. It's a really simplified offense that doesn't, you know, bring a lot to the table, doesn't get open shots for their guys. But also, we have not seen Ryan Saunders implement an offense with his full roster, and I'm going to stick to that. But Karl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell have played five games together in their entire careers for this season, and only two in a row at the beginning of the year, and then two that were not back-to-back. They barely played together. And this team is a lot different than a team with Cat, to where, yes, you probably should be getting more pin downs for like Malik Beasley, running more actions for Anthony Edwards. I'm not defending Ryan Saunders in that way. That stuff can still happen. But you're still trying to figure it out with Karl Anthony Towns and all these other options that are on the Minnesota Timberwolves right now. And you can't do that when Karl Anthony Towns is not on the floor and players cannot play with him. I'm sorry, you just can't. You can't implement an offense that way. You can't implement an offense on paper. It has to be done in practice and in games, and the Timberwolves have barely had the chance to do that. And when they've had the chance to do that, they've looked pretty dang good. Especially when Cat had two hands. Right now, he's got one arm. At least he did in the last games he played. We'll see what that looks like when he comes back. But this team isn't the worst team in the NBA. This team is not the worst team in the Western Conference when they have everybody healthy. This team's going to win games, probably, you know, half of their games. They have a really good chance to win. That's how we feel about them. And I'm pretty excited about Cat coming back. He's been in COVID protocols now for 14 days, which 10 to 14 days is the league's rule. But it is worth noting that that doesn't mean he is coming back. I will pull up something here from John Krasinski, who writes at The Athletic for the Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the best beat writers in the entire nation. And he quote tweeted something about Jimmy Butler being questionable for tonight's game. Jimmy's been out since January 9th. So Jimmy's been out for almost 3 weeks. And John just said, you know, quote, a reminder for those asking about Cat and Wancho. Saunders said yesterday there's no update on when they'll be good to go. Just because protocols say 10 to 14 days doesn't mean you're automatically ready to go as soon as you've reached that mark. It's been nearly 3 weeks for Butler. And we kind of saw a similar situation with Michael Porter Jr. I think he was out for a while longer than 2 weeks. So we're not going to, you know, just see Cat magically on Friday night. I don't think Cat's going to play Friday night. And I actually just got a notification saying Joel Embiid is questionable to play against the Timberwolves on Friday due to back tightness. But anyways, back to the point. We don't know exactly when Cat's going to come back. We hope he comes back healthy soon. We don't know if he's had symptoms or what his whole experience with the coronavirus has been. But when that team gets back together healthy, it's going to be a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to say is I don't think we're going to be as miserable. We're going to have games that we can actually dissect and be like, okay, where do we grow off of this? Because we have a healthy roster. These were the mistakes made. These are what we need to put in to implement some change. And this is how we get the most out of these players. And that's something the Wolves haven't been able to do so far this season. The last thing I want to touch on before I do wrap up this episode is Ricky Rubio. Rubio has been not good this season. Like, really not good. Like, really bad to the point that I was really surprised at how bad he's been playing. I was really excited to see Ricky Rubio play this season. I thought this is a team that he would really benefit playing for. And it just hasn't been so far, and I don't know if that's on him or the players around him or the scheme or what. Probably a combination of all three. But he's only averaging 6 points, 6 assists, which is okay. Shooting 41% from two, which is fine. You know, it's about his career average. But he's shooting less than 20% from three, 18.5%. Not good. But I will, this is why I wanted to bring this up, is because Ricky Rubio is not getting benched for Jordan McLaughlin. McLaughlin has been playing much better than Ricky Rubio this season. McLaughlin has earned his minutes at the NBA level. First reason, McLaughlin's on a two-way contract. He can only play 50 games this season. He will not play in every game. You just feasibly can't play 72 games when you're only allowed to play 50. The other thing is, Jordan McLaughlin is on a two-way contract, and Ricky Rubio makes $17 million over this season and $17 million again next season, approximately. You're not going to bench that guy for Jordan McLaughlin. Now, will his minutes maybe be reduced a little bit? Sure. Will J-Mac earn minutes going forward still? Of course he will. He's shown that he deserves them. And he probably played himself into a full NBA contract next season. But you're not benching a guy that makes $17 million for Jordan McLaughlin. Now, I could see a world where Ricky Rubio gets traded for someone and J-Mac becomes your primary backup point guard later on down the season. I could see a world where that happens. But the only way you're trading Ricky Rubio is if you play him enough for teams to see some value in him. And I could see a contender seeing some value in Rubio, but I just don't think anybody's going to trade for him right now. But I could see at the deadline somebody wanting him. And I could see if he's not playing well, the Timberwolves wanting to get rid of him. But I don't have any, you know, inside knowledge on that. Anyways, but just stop with the J-Mac playing, you know, Rubio's minutes and Rubio being out of the rotation. It's not going to happen. I'd be really surprised if it happens. Ricky is Ryan's guy, too. He's Gerson Rosas' guy. He traded for him. He wanted to sign him in free agency last summer. So it's not going to happen. I would love to see more minutes of J-Mac, too. He's looked really impressive. He's always been impressive. But that's just something that isn't going to happen, and I'm not the only one that thinks this way. That's something that, you know, pretty much all the beat writers have, you know, mentioned something about. So I just wanted to touch on that. But anyways, that is, I think, going to do it for today's show. So thank you guys so much for listening. I really do appreciate that. I appreciate all the support on this podcast and on my written work. I've been getting great feedback, and I really do appreciate that. You know, if you guys could subscribe to this podcast or download it or give it a rating or feedback or whatever, on whatever podcast platform you listen on, if that's Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Anchor or whatever it is, if you could, you know, download, listen, do all that with every podcast, it helps me out a ton, and I really do appreciate that. But anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. It's Brendan, the Wolves 2-game losing streak against the Warriors, back at it Friday. Thanks for listening. Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.